B'shush Marino, Rav Shlita, we say this shir le'ilu nishmas, Mrs. Feige Storfer, Maras Feige Bas Yehuda Yitzchak HaKohen, and the shir is kindly sponsored by her daughter Hazel Israel, whom we wish l'chaim aruchim and all the family on the occasion of her yahrzeit. And I remember Mrs. Storfer very well. She was my neighbour, the most kind, wonderful lady, who we had the zechus to know for many, many years. Okay, well, the mechitza, before I get on to the subject of mechitza, I hope you all had a nice sukkos, wonderful chagim, and that the spirit of the chagim permeates our lives until the next chag. We said, v'hasienu Hashem Elokeinu esbik asmardecha. We carry forward the bracha of the Yom Tov right through to the next Yom Tov. So this bracha has to last us for 6 months, or five and a half. And just one correction to something I said last month. I was talking about a story. I said Rabbi Kiva Eger was testing boys for entering a yeshiva, and one boy was walking on schach leaves, which were lying on the ground, and he declined to accept this boy, even though he was an Eloi, and he accepted an average boy who walked around the schach leaves. And when I repeated this story in my sukkah, my 15-year-old granddaughter said to me, "Wasn't it the Chasam Sofer?" And I checked and she was right. It wasn't Rabbi Akiva Rega, but they were brothers-in-law anyway, so it's all the same mishpacha. So, what is it all about? In mechitza, sometimes it's a very contentious subject. It divides communities even, and you'd think, does it really matter so much? I mean, we see women in the street every day, and is it such a distraction? After all, they're going to be very modestly dressed, aren't they? The most attractive mechitza I think I've ever seen was in the Hilton Hotel in Eilat. I wasn't staying there, but they had a very nice minyan there. And it's a very decorative, ornate mechitza, interwoven and the right height with engravings and with psukim. So if you're ever in that area of the world, I recommend you go and see it. It's really nice. But what's the source for it? Why do we have to have mechitza? Why is it that we're not allowed to daven in a shul where there is no mechitza, or where there is an inadequate mechitza? We'll come to some of these examples later. So it all started at the Simchas Beis HaShoeva in the second Beis HaMikdosh. And Gemara Sukkah Daf Nun Aleph Amad Aleph talks about the festivities taking place, and they made a tikkun gadol. The rabbis made a great change to the structure of the Beis HaMikdosh, because they were concerned at the flirting which was going on between men and women at the festive occasions. You know, on Yom Tov, people are in a more merry mood, they might be drinking, and therefore there may be more attraction between the sexes, and the kalus rosh, the light-headedness which results from it. So they enacted a decree that the women shall be in a balcony above. No disrespect to the women, they should not feel as second-class citizens, but it's in fact a compliment to the women that because they are attractive and because they are a distraction to us, therefore they should be in the balcony. And the Gemara asks in surprise, "Hey, how could the rabbis do this? After all, the structure of the Beis HaMikdash is already specified, as it says in Divrei Hayomim Aleph, chapter 28, verse 19, that these specs, so to speak, were ones which should not be changed." So Rav answers in the Gemara, we base it on a pasuk in Zechariah, chapter 12, verse 12, that at a shiva the women were sitting separately to the men, and a kal v'chomer was made. If at the time of mourning, when people are miserable, we separate the men and the women, that there should not be an interaction, there should not be intermingling. So kal v'chomer, all the more so, at the festive occasions at the Beis HaMikdosh, there should be some sort of separation between men and women. And this is quoted by Rav Moshe Feinstein in quite a lengthy way in a number of his tshuvas, primarily in his Chelek Aleph, Simon Lamates, Mem Mem Aleph, where he analyzes the history of the mechitza. It is in fact possible that the Chazal could have just banned women, said, right, if women are a distraction, then let's just ban them coming into the Beis HaMikdosh. But the truth is that women did frequent the Beis HaMikdosh. Gemara Kedushin and Beis talks about not just the Sotam, not just the Nazira, but women had a special gate to the Azara. They could bring their own Karbonas. This is in Midas, Perek Beis. There was a Shar HaNoshim. So we never wanted to exclude the women. but we wanted to have some way of being able to maintain a Kedusha. And the question we're going to ask is, what is the primary purpose of the Mechitza? Is it to stop the intermingling, or is it simply to separate men and women completely? In fact, last night there was a Mechitza in a street in Golders Green. There was a Chnosa Sefer Torah at Golders Green Road, Golders Manor Drive, and there was a Mechitza along Golders Manor Drive, and they had a giant TV-style screen showing what's going on inside the shul, because there wasn't enough space, and there was a crowd of women on one side and a crowd of men on the other side, and there must have been about 1,000 people there. And
I hope they got planning permission.
Well, I'll give you my business card later. So it was an amazing event, but you could probably hear the noise of it here in North Hendon.
Did they have fireworks?
No, but there were still some Diwali fireworks going on. The Rashi in Kedusha Pei Aleph remarks about a buyer placing jugs and robber placing reeds where men and women are sitting separately but without a mechitza, but to make sure that one doesn't enter the other's area where they might be misbehaving. So by placing jugs between them or reeds between them, they would rattle or fall and make a noise, and that would be like a siren. It's a bit like walking out the supermarket with something you shouldn't be carrying. Mind you, last week it happened to me when I took a trolley which had an alarm on it, and well, I thought, you know, I'll fill up the trolley, I don't have to then bother with bags. And as I exited the supermarket, the alarm went off. Yeah, I was going to bring the trolley back anyway, but it was one of those which were used for internal use only. So it's a bit like what Bayan Robber did, you know, the siren goes off. And there, Rashi and Kedusha, it's talking about where there was a gathering to hear a Jerusha. So this was not davening, but if there's a Jerusha taking place, there was a presumption that even at times of Jerusha, the men and women would be sitting separately. So the question is then, why is this a halacha? Is it based on the intermingling, or is it based on something else? The Shalosh Shuvos Bnei Vonim says that this pasuk in Zechariah, which gave us the Kal Vachomer, is dealing only with shuls and batei midrashim, which have a specific kedusha about them, a certain holiness. And therefore, Rav Moshe Feinstein learns out from this that this was a din all along because of the pasuk in Zechariah. He even does a drasha to say that the concept of mechitza is a din min haTorah, which is quite a chiddush. But the question is, what is the mechitza meant to accomplish? If it's meant to prevent intermingling, then you don't really have to have a bulletproof sky-high mechitza. But if it's to prevent people just looking at women, then that's a different concept. If you're looking at women, then maybe the mechitza has to be very high and that you don't see them at all. However, the psak of Rav Moshe Feinstein is that mechitza only has to be shoulder height. If it's only shoulder height, then you can see the women's faces. So there can be a distraction. So what is the issue here? Now, the concept of mechitza, you might say, is a bit weird because it's not actually mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. And the Tzitz Eliezer explains in Chelek Zayin Simen Ches that this is because it was always taken for granted. It was only later on, until the 19th century, when the Reform came along and they started abolishing the Mechitza, that questions started being asked. But because it was taken for granted, it was not ever listed in the Shulchan Aruch. And in fact, there are numerous halachas which are not listed in the Shulchan Aruch. And Mishnah Berurah mentions this in Simen Kuf Nun Vov, Sif Gotten Dalet. He lists numerous examples of dinim which are not in the Shulchan Aruch. Doesn't even talk about Lashon Hara. So then, with the advent of the Reform, there was this attack against the Mechitza. It was almost as if the Mechitza is a barometer of the kind of religiosity the Kehila has. That the less of the Mechitza, the more rebellious is the community. And it happened a lot in the 1950s and 1960s, where those who had entered the rabbinate, there were not many jobs around, and there were Orthodox rabbis who became ministers of Reform congregations. So much so that when I was in yeshiva in Israel, there was an American boy there who heard me talking about how terrible these Reform rabbis are, who destroy our religion and they don't accept Torah min haShamayim. And this boy said to me, "Do you really mean that?" I said, "Of course I do." He said, "Well, my father is a Reform rabbi." How embarrassing. So I said, well, I'm sure your father's a very nice guy, going by what you're like, but I think he's mistaken. He's representing an organization which is attacking Yiddishkeit, not just fleeing away from Yiddishkeit. And in fact, within a year or so, he told me that his father had decided, on his son's persuasion, that he should give it up. But you get this a lot. I remember a friend of mine introduced me to a girl when I was still a bachelor, and we went out on a date, and she told me she was a teacher in a cheder in a Reform synagogue. So you can imagine what the dialogue was for the rest of the evening. So there was a big proclamation. The author of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Rav Gantzfried, together with the Maharam Ash, and there were others, the Divrei Chaim, they made a big proclamation about the abolition of the mechitza, because it was a threat to Yiddishkeit, even if women are dressed properly and so on. The idea is that the Beis HaKnesses, the shul, is a place of Kedusha, and you represent Kedusha by not having the women together with the men. But the question
was Moshe about becoming a minister in a conservative shul.
Yeah. Yeah, it's treachery. Anyway, so is the purpose of the mechitza to stop men gazing at the women, which is called histaklus, or is it kalus rosh, frivolity, where they might just be flirting with each other? Well, I shouldn't say just. You know, that's a serious matter. Or is it something else? So we've got different reasons given for mechitzas. One is the idea of to prevent frivolity, as we know from the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. The other one is histaklus, not to stare at them. Then the idea of Kedusha and a Beis HaKnesses, we've got a posuk against Mikdash Ha'Tiro. So we don't have a complete separation, but you have an idea where the place has holiness. Or do we just say Minag Yisrael Tari, that is the tradition we've got handed down to us. So all these three reasons are given. There's a fourth reason given by the Chasam Sofer. He says, Kol Isha, you're more likely to hear women singing if the women and the men are together. But that reason is dismissed by Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sri Day Eish, in Chelek Aleph Simon Ches, because, you know, if two voices are heard together, if men and women are singing together, it's not an issue, because when different voices are together, then you don't really hear anything at all. He even quotes the example of Barak ben Avinam and the Shiras Devorah that they sang together. So he's not worried about that.
What about the Yamsim?
Oz Yashir Moshe. The men sang, the Shira and the women sang separately.
Yeah.
that is brought down. There is another reason brought by Rav Soloveitchik, and he says it is the way of the non-Jews to sit together as a family in the churches. We are not going to copy their ways. I know a Jewish barrister very, very well, and he told me that he used to belong to United Synagogue, but he wanted to sit with his family, so he went off to the Masorti. But this is a breach of the tradition which we have handed down to us. So Rav Soloveitchik was very strong about this, and somebody in Boston asked him that the only shul in the area where he lived was one where there was a very low mechitza, and Rav Soloveitchik told him even on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur he should just rather stay at home. He should even miss hearing the shofar being blown and not daven in there. I remember in the 1970s, very low mechitza, yeah, like a token thing. So I will discuss in a moment the measurements. I know that in the 1970s, I was giving shirim to some people in Kingston, Surbiton, in South London, and there was one teenager there by the name of Shimon Russell, who is now a very well-known psychotherapist. He lives in Yerushalayim now. And he was brought up in that community. And when he came back from yeshiva, he was not coming to the shul at all on Shabbos mornings because of the mechitza. And the minister was obviously feeling he didn't want to turn people away. And, you know, you get these quandaries happening and these arguments happening. What about if, you know, your brother is having a bar mitzvah in one of these shuls? Can you go? And the shaila came up to Rav Soloveitchik on that. And he said to the person, you want to go to your family's bar mitzvah? Okay, you go, but you daven beforehand, before you go to shul. And you don't say amen to any of the brachas. So Rav Shechter in America said, look, if it's only 10 tefachim high, which is a very compromising dimension, okay, if it's a family event, but don't become a member of such a shul. So the 10 tefachim high is a valid mechitza for Hilchas Shabbos, and we're talking about Hilchas Sukkah, so we're not talking about those sorts of mechitzas today. We're talking about a mechitza separating men and women, and Rav Moshe Feinstein paskens in Igros Moshe Chelek Aleph that the minimum shear is 18 tefachim, which is shoulder height, 18 tefachim. So that is his psak, and you can still see women, which is shoulder height. There's no problem about seeing the women. And you can see women in our shul when you look up at the ladies' gallery, but it's not a problem because it's a gallery, it's a balcony, and therefore it conforms to the psak of Rav Moshe Feinstein. I remember in 1965, when Rabbi Cooper was concerned about the openness of the ladies' gallery, that it was easy to see the ladies, and as a result of that, these Mogen Dovids were erected around the screening just to obliterate it a little bit. You can still see the ladies, but it conforms to the Psak of Rav Moshe because it's a separate gallery and you're not going to get intermingling taking place when you have the balcony at a higher level. There were, though, others who disagreed. The main opposition to Rav Moshe Feinstein was the Satmar Rebbe. The Satmar Rebbe, who said, if people are able to stare at women, then that is intermingling. He interpreted it as being something which was against the rules, and he said it has to be high enough to block the visibility of the women completely. And he said, no glass, no flowers, no none of these wooden slats. The balcony, even a balcony is not good enough unless it's given a curtain that you should not be able to see. And this was a big machlokus which carried forward now, and the Hasidim are very keen to make sure that you can't see the women at all. But Rav Moshe Feinstein's psak is generally accepted, is the Minhag HaOlam, that shoulder height is good enough. Rav Moshe talks about families who would sit together for the Korban Pesach. And you have to have a hasmona beforehand. A few families would share one lamb for the Korban Pesach because it was too much to eat for one family. And the men and women would sit together. And he quoted sources on this. And there was no mechitza. He says the reason why it was okay there was because it was by invitation only. It was not a public event. So Rav Moshe says when you have a public event, then we are more particular. But these things like having the Korban Pesach was not a public event. But if anybody could turn up, then you should start thinking about separation. But Rav Moshe says that Tan Tefachim B'Di'eved would be acceptable as a form of mechitza, but no real compromises for 18 Tefachim is the ideal.
So even if you see them women's faces.
Right. So he says glass is a problem because women, in case they are not dressed properly, and then if there's improper dress and uncovered hair and so on, he's therefore not happy about glass. But he certainly endorses one-way mirrors are fine. No problem with women seeing the men, even though we're all tall, dark and handsome. No problem about that. So Sride Eish endorses Rav Moshe Feinstein. There in Chelek Aleph, Ayin Zayin. He says, really, it's mainly the shuls where you have to have this separation, where you have nine mechitzas. But if you have gatherings which are non-obligatory, like, for example, a drasha, an annual general meeting, a chuppah. In the chuppahs, the men sit on one side and the women sit on the other side, inside the shul. And I mentioned it to Rav Kahn just a few minutes ago, that's the minhag, that we have a chuppah, men sit on one side, women sit on the other side. You don't have a mechitza there, do you? So why is it then the fact that it's generally held, and Rav Moshe says that the shul is a place of kedusha, so any gathering in a shul, whatever it is, even if it's for a secular reason, should have a mechitza because a shul is a place of kedusha. So I found the Ksav Sofer, the Shalos HaTshuvos, who says that we have this tradition, the tradition that if you have a chuppah, the men and women are not separated by a mechitza. All right, they'll be on separate sides. He said nobody has ever questioned it. It's always been the tradition, and therefore we don't try to find fault with our ancestors. If we're not Nevi'im, we're B'nai Nevi'im. And although chuppahs traditionally were never inside the shul originally, but they became inside the shul. We don't challenge it. So that's something we are not going to challenge our ancestors about. But the general idea is that the shul has, is a place of kedusha, and therefore you're more particular inside a shul. There is an interesting idea, and that is many buildings are built as shuls, but they're multi-purpose. Especially many United synagogues, many shtiebels, Hasidic shtiebels, they eat and they drink in there, they have the shalashudas in there, they have the Rebbe's tish in there. So they're having multiple activities in United synagogues. They might screen off the Aron HaKodesh, and they might have all kinds of parties, and not just kiddushin, but keep fit classes, multi-purpose. So that depends on the nature of the construction when you started having such a use. If you had a tanai at the beginning that this building would be used for multi-purpose, then fine, then you don't need the mechitzas. But if from the beginning it was just set aside for being a shul, then that maintains the kedusha of a shul and you can't have multi-use. And I heard that Rabbi Kahn actually went to visit Mr. Nathan Merrill, Zichrono Livracha, who was the instigator of this shul building in 1963, 1965. 1963 was the foundation stone. I remember being in the choir. In 1965, the building was opened. And so Rabbi Kahn went to ask Mr. Merrill whether there was any condition stipulated when this shul was built. And Mr. Merrill admitted that there was no condition, that it was just set aside for being a shul. And that is why the shul is maintained as a shul and not multi-purpose. But if there's a condition from the outset, then it's okay.
They are let outs.
They are left out.
Yeah. Let outs. Yeah.
They are let outs. Yeah. The Mordechai wrote, yes.
If you quote a remission that it only applies to a shul, which is the place of kedusha. So we've had it, we've been away on summer holiday, and we come to Friday night and Shabbos morning davening. We want to daven together as a family in one room. And I seem to remember one of my boys saying it's not a problem.
Yeah, if you don't have a Beis HaKnesses kavua, it's not a fixed place for a shul. And it's the same with shivas. Yeah. It doesn't matter if there are women standing at the side in a shiva, because it's not a place which is fixed for being a shul. Obviously, if women are not adequately dressed, then you can't daven there. But if they are adequately dressed, it's not a problem. So those sorts of places, a temporary shul, a shiva, a shiva brachas, especially if it's just family, or a minion on an aeroplane, and this is brought in Ishei Yisrael 28:9, then if they're davening in opposite corners, good enough. It's okay. So we once had a Sheva Brachas in our house for a niece, and the father of the chosan said, where's the mechitza? And we don't have a mechitza, it's family, you know, we're all right, a few friends around, but it's family, and people have been invited, it's not open to the public, so there's clear cut pasak, you don't need a mechitza. But there was this mechutan who insisted there should be a mechitza for benching. And this is based on a view which is brought in the Sefer Chassidim, that when you have a Sheva Brachas and you say Shah Simcha Bimono, then Shah Simcha Bimono cannot be said when the Yetzara might be present and people might have arousing thoughts, and therefore you should have a Mechitza. So this guy actually asked for a blanket, and he, in our own house, without asking for permission of course, he stuck up a curtain in our living room. Well, I wasn't going to make machlokas. Good luck to him if that's what he wants. Nobody really suffered from it. But it's not our minhag. It's not brought down to us. In fact, my mother used to tell me in Frankfurt in Germany, it was quite normal at wedding dinners for men and women to sit together. There was never any issa for it.
I don't know if I heard that Rav Moshe Feinstein made weddings where they sat.
Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Sternbuch actually was not very happy about it, because in his Tshuva Svanhogus, Chelek Beis, Samach Hay, he says in Johannesburg, where he was a Rav for many years, he said most weddings are mixed and they're sitting at one table, and in our great iniquity there are rabbis there who are participating, and this is a big Chilul Hashem. But nevertheless, there are others who say it's not such a bad deal. The Levush in Orach Chaim in Hogim 36 says we're not careful about this nowadays because women are accustomed to be around more. We don't have them at home the whole time. They are out in the street. And therefore it is more common for us to see women, and therefore there are no sexual arousals when women are seen. And the Rosh actually says we just treat them just like white geese. He says, namely, they're not provocative. If the women are just, they're there like white geese. And the Abir Omer Vadi Yosef writes, says, we rely on the Levush, there in Chelek Vov, Simon Yud Gimel. He says, even in the great town Saloniki, in, I think it was in Greece, they had mixed seating, which was a very holy kehillah. They had mixed seating at Chasnas. And the Tzitz Eliezer writes in Chelek Tes, Simon Nun, that nowadays it's different, that women are not confined to their houses, they're out and about, we work with them in offices and so on, and therefore, since we see women a lot in the street, there isn't such a worry about the flirting and frolicking, and of course, there's a lot of harassment rules, aren't there, in the statutes. And the Orach HaShulchan expresses a similar view in terms of benching in front of women whose hair are not covered, that he allows that to happen because people don't get turned on in the same way as it used to be.
The minute of Lubavitch is at the Sheva Brachas in the wedding.
Yes.
They get all the men together, we're going to do the Sheva Brachas for two reasons. Number one, because of the women around the tables, and number two, there should be no tefsik between the brachas. All this singing in between brachas at the Sheva Brachas is a big problem. So they have everybody together.
Right, Reb Moshe Feinstein expresses a bit doubt about weddings because he says a wedding is not a public event. And since it's not a public event, although nowadays many of them become like that, but he says it's not about people are invited, so it's more like a family gathering. And he doesn't see it as compulsive to have a mechitza at these occasions. But the Shevet HaLevi writes in Chelek Ches, he says, especially because of the Sheva Brachos, the idea of what the Sefer Chasidim says, you should have a mechitza for the Sheva Brachos. And there are different opinions on this. So we've got others. There's the Bikas Reuben Shlomo, who argues with Rav Moshe, and he says that there should definitely be a mechitza at such gatherings. So you've got those for, you've got those against.
It's about gatherings, or is it if it's a public tefillah or not? Because if you're having a chuppah service, it's not a tefillah, is it? It's a public gathering, it's not a tefillah.
Yes, so as I said, the Ksav Sofer is willing to accept the idea of chuppahs because that's the way it's always been and we don't challenge our ancestors. But logically, if you're going to have anything in a shul which is a place of kedusha, you have a mechitza, then you should have one at a wedding, but we don't actually have that tradition. So we rely on the Lavush and the Sheva Halevi and the Tzitz Eliezer and what the others said, who I've just quoted. But the Igros Moshe says weddings are a private affair and therefore we're not going to make a big deal out of it. Now this argument between Satmar and Rav Moshe Feinstein got quite fierce, in fact. There were two issues which the Satmar Hasidim felt very antagonized about with Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein was the Pe'er Hador, the Gadol Hador. He was it, and everybody accepted him for it, and his gadlus was amazing. And yet the Satmar Hasidim disagreed with him on two big matters. Number one was artificial insemination, where he seemingly seemed to be quite lenient about it, that if a child is conceived with artificial insemination, and it was not derech bio, it was not the normal manner of intercourse, he was more lenient on the idea that there was no such thing as mamzerus and so on, and the Satmar Hasidim just dismissed this out of hand, they couldn't accept it. And the other thing was mechitza. They were very upset that he was lenient in their eyes about mechitza, and there was even book burning going on of the Igros Moshe. That's how it got violent in parts. And in the 8th chelek of Igros Moshe, which was published posthumously, Rav Moshe Feinstein's psaks, which were given when he was still alive, but then he died and they haven't yet printed them, there is a big hakdoma in the 8th chelek of Igros Moshe, which tells a story about one of the leaders of Satmar, who was very much publicly against Rav Moshe Feinstein, who attacked him verbally. This guy got arrested by the FBI for alleged money laundering, and he faced a life sentence. And this fellow, who had castigated Rav Moshe, came to Rav Moshe and asked him if he could write a letter of support, because Rav Moshe was taken so seriously by the secular authorities as a leading halakhic authority. So he asked Rav Moshe to write a letter for him, and Rav Moshe's relation said, "How could you? How could you do such a thing? This guy's been against you all his life and he's been attacking you. You want to write a letter of support for him? Reb Moshe wrote a letter of support for him. And when he was asked, why do you do that? He said, well, if I can save another Yid from a life sentence in prison, I'll write a letter of support. This was the godless of Reb Moshe Feinstein. Amazing. Now, yes?
There was, many years ago, there was a chuppah from the shul held in Kinloss. Normally, you'd have mincha before the chuppah.
Yeah, yeah.
Women on one side, women on the right, men on the left, but they hadn't yet done mincha. So they had to have mincha before the chasna, before the chuppah in the shul where everybody was. And Rabbi Cooper, I remember, moved to the left hand wall of the shul. And I assumed, and maybe I even spoke to him about it, I can't remember, that it was so that all the other men would be interposing between himself and the women. Is that possible?
That's interesting. Well, Rabbi Cooper always wanted to avoid machlokes.
Oh.
And that was very important for him, and understandably so. And anything he could do to go out of his way to prevent an argument from happening, and in all the years I was here, I never saw machlokes going on. Involving Rabbi Cooper. He somehow had a skill of getting all the parties together, and he commanded a great respect that way. So that what you say just fits in with what I'm saying.
If his own personal tefillah, he would be on the left-hand wall.
Right. Yeah, but according to others, you might just doesn't. You can. Usually, there's time afterwards for mincha as well. And so you might say
the tish before, isn't it?
There's usually a tish before. Usually you have the mincha separate. And in fact, in Kenlos, that's the way it's done nowadays. They have a tish, and the men are in their own room, so it's not a problem. The real problem is not so much the weddings, which, as I said, are not mokum kavua necessarily. The real problem are the actual shuls themselves. I was very surprised. I came to one shul in Golders Green, and I was amazed to see that there wasn't really a proper division going on. You see, it's like this. 43 years ago, I proposed to my future wife in the hall of Dunstan Road Synagogue. You might think, well, you couldn't think of a more romantic place to propose, could you? But I was giving a shiur to some teenagers, and she joined in, and I actually proposed in the middle of that shiur to her. But we won't go down that route now and tell you what happened. But romantic place in our hearts. So my son was keen to see this shul. Even though that hall at the back has now been redeveloped into the Rimmon School. But we went one Shabbos morning to... Now, Dunstan Road used to be a magnificent cathedral-type shul with a big ladies' gallery. And it had 1,500 members in the 1970s. When I even once stumbled at the Onward there. And but then the ladies were all upstairs. But the membership has dwindled, and they wanted to make it more... Heimish. So what they did was, now the ladies don't daven upstairs anymore. With the slopes of the floor levels, they've had men, they have now men on one side, women on the other side, and there's this little token mechitz in the middle which you can hardly see, and the men are directly facing the women, because in the United Synagogue the seating faces sideways. So the men are facing the women when they're davening, when they're seated. Alright, when they stand up and they do their Shemoneh Esrei, they turn and they face their Aron HaKodesh. And I couldn't understand how this could be. I know that, it's practical to have the women coming downstairs. But the problem is, you can't really have a mechitza where the men are facing the women. That Rav Moshe says that if the ground level is such that it's slanting, then your mechitza has to be higher. You have to have shoulder height. And it's not shoulder height. So although you've got your 18 tefachim, or if it's 10 tefachim, I think it's only 10 tefachim, it's meaningless. So I don't understand how an Orthodox institution like the United Synagogue can have an arrangement like this. All right, maybe they've got some opinion to rely on, and I wouldn't challenge the great Rabbonim who are leading it, but I fail to understand how it can be done in line with what we've seen in our sources. I mean, there's another shul I've been to in Manchester called Steam Court, a very popular shul for weddings, where they've had the women on a level which is sloping, where the men are on a flat surface and the women on a slope, and they've had glass as well, so you could see the women quite easily. They did refurbishments a couple of years ago, which I think has minimised that somewhat. But the problem is, women feel as though they are sidelined. Women feel as though they're made second class. And therefore, you do have a number of Orthodox shuls where you have them all on one level, and you have a mechitza down the middle. So the men on one side, women on the other side, and that's fine. And I went to shul recently in Yerushalayim where it's like that. The question is the chazan allowed to go to the women with a sefer Torah for them to kiss? That's also a controversy. Some allow it, some don't. But while we're talking about women feeling sidelined and they're feeling like second-class citizens, I'd like to quote to you from an article written by a lady called Natalie Gorman from Brooklyn, USA, who grew up in the Reform. And she says, I grew up in the Reform and I sat in a mixed environment. And later on, though, it came as a bit of a surprise to me. When I was a college student and I moved away, I started davening in an Orthodox shul. She said, I fell in love with the mechitza. I expected to have a feeling of inferiority, but I found peace. No longer was I being stared at, because the women were not staring at me, and the men couldn't stare at me. It created a barrier, a space where I could pray without reference to anyone else. A place where I felt I could relate to God unself-consciously. That I didn't have this feeling that I was being watched and I had to put up my makeup beforehand and, you know, dress accordingly, where I felt I could just be myself. She said, I am a feminist. I am progressive. I believe in gender equality. But before, when we all davened together in the Reform, I felt self-conscious. I came to see the mechitza as a symbol of my independence. The mechitza has allowed me to claim prayer as a private space where I can simply be myself. I realized I was not being disrespected. We were separate for reasons of law and custom and tradition in a religious setting. I was choosing to sit separately from the men. Nobody was forcing me to daven that way. And after 6 years, she said, I can now wave goodbye to my husband. At first, she wasn't married. I waved goodbye to him. We walked to our respective sides. I am glad that his space of prayer is for him and my space is for me. I can focus and I'm ready to pray. So looking at this from the other side of the mechitza, we find here a view where women are feeling more respected by having that space and that privacy. Just like you'll have separate changing rooms in a gym, so you'll have separate davening spaces in a shul. That the women feel respected and they don't feel abused. They don't feel disrespected at all. And maybe the shuls which are labelling themselves as Orthodox should know that the mechitza, although in itself might just be a token thing, it's a barometer. It has become to be seen as a barometer to measure the devotion and conscientiousness of the community in which it stands. So with that, I'll be welcoming any objections, criticisms, which will be handled as sensitively as possible. Thank you. Yes?
You know, I once went to a simcha where they have separate entrances for men and women.
A lot of people have.
Is this halachic too?
Right. Am Yisrael Kadoshim Heim. The Jewish people are a holy people. And if they feel that they will be able to enhance their devotion and their dveikus and their closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by introducing measures, like when you come out of the shul, there's a mechitza along the yard so that the women are not intermingling in front of the shul, we won't criticize that. Even though it's not necessary min halacha, we can praise Jews who are conscientious to do things what they feel is right. And that's the idea of Am Yisrael Kadoshim Heim. So if those want to practice chumras and go say according to the Sutner view of complete separation, you can't see each other, fine. But at the end of the day, you are walking in the street and you are seeing women, and that is the view of many poskim, which does influence the fact that you're not likely to get the arousal which Chazal were worried about, or the frolicking, which, you know, I mean, when men and women come out of North End and Shul, they're not flirting with, they're not frolicking with each other.
You don't have a kiddush at the
kiddush. You don't have a kiddush at the kiddush.
Some people insist on men on one side, other men who dusk go on the women's side. But we don't have a kiddush.
I'll tell you about my brother. My brother got married in Vienna, and he was very disturbed at the fact when he saw the tables being laid for the wedding dinner, of his wedding dinner, that the men were in one room and the women were in another room. And he said, I can't have this. Yeah. He said, I'm going to sit next to my new wife. And he left the men and he sat amongst the women that he could chat with his new wife at the wedding dinner. Now, I'm not telling you all to follow the example of my brother, but we can see from the poskim we've discussed that it wasn't necessary to put them in separate halls. It wasn't necessary, especially such a joyous event, and it's a family event. It's not a public event.
I relate the story which was told to me by somebody that in the Vizhnitz Hotel in Bnei Brak, there was, women were sitting separately at the dinner, and men did, and the women came in, and the Kala and her mother came in to the men's for the Sheva Brachas. And one Rav got up there and said, you can't say Sheva Brachas, because the Chosn and Kala didn't eat together. And he insisted that they benched. The Chosn and Kala washed.
Wow.
And then benched again, and then they could make Sheva
Brachas. Very nice.
But as they say in the cat,
Oisgehalten. My mother had an expression for it. My mother used to call it being Yomtov Dick, which was a polite way of describing it. But as I said,
at weddings, the dancing, there's always a mechitza.
Yeah. We're dancing because one should not be watching women dancing, and therefore it's important that there is a mechitza at weddings when there's dancing. But as I said, Am Yisrael Kadoshim Hayim, and even if we don't feel inclined to be as stringent as some other communities are, we have to respect those who wish to adopt an approach where they feel it's protective for themselves. That's something which we can respect. All right, our next year will be on the 23rd of November, Be'ezus Hashem, and we'll be on the subject of palindromes.